Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So here's the question. Do storytelling skills really make a difference for you? Just ask our special guest today, Parker Wirth. Parker decided he had had enough of high school at 16. His first job was cleaning toilets. From there, he went to electrician school and after a few years, got a job traveling around the world as an electrician. But his own story really starts to take off when he discovers social media. That led to this advice for him. Just hop on Twitter. At first, not much happened. But one day he got a powerful idea. Put the story of his life so far into a thread. He says, I published it. I went to sleep. And I woke up with millions of views and messages. Today, Parker has nearly 44,000 followers on Twitter X and more than 20,000 on LinkedIn, as well as multiple six-figure businesses of his own. One of his biggest secrets is his discovery of what makes certain social media stories, news stories, and ad stories stick. He's going to share that with us today, just after I share this with you. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, Parker, welcome. So glad to have you here.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here, David. I'm a huge fan of your work, the podcast, your books. Very excited.
Cool. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to focus on telling stories online. Of course, I have the persuasion story code, but you have really focused on a few specific ways to use stories on social media, on the different platforms to generate all kinds of followerships and business. Let's start with mistakes, okay? What are some of the most common mistakes you see with people telling stories online?
Yeah, it's a great question, and there's a lot of them. Some of the main ones are just being long-winded, seemingly pointless. I've had clients and people in the past show me their stories that are thousands of words long. And in the age of AI and the digital space, basically people are scrolling, you're competing for attention against, you know, memes and puppy pictures. And you really want someone to be left off on an emotion as fast as possible. Like, for example, a big one is having a very long setup where, you know, I'm sure you've had an uncle or a grandfather that's like, yeah, you know, back when I owned a farm and, you know, the wheat was really tall and we had these really good vegetables. And you're like, oh, okay, grandpa, what's the point? And a lot of people will, you know, there are places for that, right? Whether it's books, you know, there's books that the first half of the book is describing the scenery. However, social media, like I said, it's a rabid competition for attention. And so having a long-winded setup, you can basically just use one sentence to tell people who's there, what's there and what's happening. 7 years ago, you know, I was an electrician. Now people know the time, they know what's happening, they know what's there, and there's no other reason to go into detail about things that don't necessarily matter in that story, right? I wouldn't say, I was an electrician and I had to wear work boots and I had this wrench that I loved. It's a lot of fluff that can be removed. So I would say that's the big one, is just avoiding being long-winded. The next one is not having a point. A lot of people will just tell stories that don't end on a point or a lesson or really have an emotional payoff. And it's almost selfish in a way to have people sit there and read this and spend their own time on it without getting some kind of punchline or lesson or something to walk away with. And so you'll see that pretty often. It's almost like a trend. People will just try to tell a random story about something that happened and there's no point. And you're like, okay, what's the deal with this? And unfortunately, like I said, people are behind a screen. They're not seeing you or talking to you. And a lot of the results would be getting unfollowed, getting muted, maybe not necessarily getting blocked, but people would be like, well, that was a waste of time, right? And so one of the biggest things is kind of reverse engineering. This is what I do in my process, is like, what's my point? or what's the emotional payoff I want to give people, right? Like, I want them to feel inspired by this story, and reverse engineering your story from there. I know a lot of times, even when I was a beginner, I would write a story, and then at the end of it, I had to try to figure off the payoff or tie an emotion to it. And then by that point, it's like, wait, this story doesn't really have that punch. You know, this should be a draft. And then I'd be frustrated because I wasted so much time writing something that didn't have a great payoff, didn't have a unique lesson. And so being observational to things that have a great lesson or a point you want to teach, and then working back from there. I would say those are the big ones, especially online, is like having white space. White space is a big deal, especially on social media, on email, separating those sentences. There's nothing worse than a wall of text nowadays. You know, people have a mental treadmill and they're burning calories when they're reading. And if they start burning too many calories on that treadmill, they're going to leave, right? So you want to make it easy on the eyes as far as formatting. I would say those are some of the biggies and the most common ones that I see, David.
That's an excellent summary. I approach it mostly the same way. I would ask you, is it fair to say that you see the readers silently saying, entertain me, surprise me, inspire me, but they're certainly not saying, inform me, and they definitely aren't saying, bore me. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I like a lot is, you know, beginning with the ending. I mean, that helps so much. If you know, most people never think about the purpose of what they want to write or the result they're looking for. Of course, direct response copywriters think of it when they're trying to sell something, and the end result would be somebody clicks or buys or puts in their credit card number. But you're expanding that idea to anything you write on social media. What's the result? Do you want to inspire somebody? Do you want to make them laugh? Do you want to make them, you know, feel somber about something sad? What is that endpoint? And then reverse engineer it, build it up to that. And of course, cut everything out that doesn't really contribute to that, while at the same time keeping it conversational. Anyway, I love your answer. How about really short stories? How can you tell a story in one sentence?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. And that kind of ties back in the one big mistake I see people make is they have to write a huge story. We're on social media and, you know, very inspired by your book, The Persuasion Story Code. But basically, how can you tell a story in 4 to 5 sentences? And I was doing this for a while. Like, the short form stories work really well on, you know, Instagram threads, LinkedIn, Twitter, usually everywhere, even on video. It's very punchy and people can get an emotional payoff super fast. And I went on a deep dive and, you know, came across Hemingway, and it's debated whether he said this or not, but they said, can you write a story in 6 words? And he said, supposedly the story goes, he says, sure, give me a pen and paper. And he writes, you know, for sale, baby shoes, never worn. And I was just very blown away by, okay, there is a huge emotional punch in 6 words, and what's going on here. And it turns out Hemingway says he used something, I don't know if he formulated this idea or learned it from somebody else, but iceberg theory. And the idea is you have the iceberg sticking out of the water, right? Like the Titanic, there was a little nub sticking out of the water. They couldn't see it, but below it was this huge glacier essentially under the water. And what Hemingway said he would do is he wants to write as few words as possible, which would be on the surface, the words that you can see of the iceberg, but the emotional payoff that people start to think is below water. And it was a great quote by Robert Greene. It's like, there's more power in what's left unsaid. And so I think people that can master these one sentence stories, and, you know, it takes a lot of skill, but basically give someone as few words as possible, but give them as much of an emotional payoff as possible, is very powerful in the digital age, especially in the age of AI, where anyone can kind of create content, but no one's working this hard to give somebody an emotional payoff as fast as possible, right? And so I went in this deep dive and would just take a look at things. And like, for an example, it'd be, my mom taught me how to shave. And it's like, okay, someone reads that and they're like, oh, what happened to his dad? And it opens a loop, mm-hmm. It creates a question. Mm-hmm. That really entices people and keeps them, you know, in that regard. And so it's like, a lot of times it's very contradictory things. Like, you'll have a really close juxtaposition or a contradiction in one sentence. And sometimes they lead to really good big ideas, right? Like Mark Manson, his book is The Subtle Art of Not, I don't know if I can curse here, but I'll just say it. Subtle Art of Not Giving a Friend. Yeah. Or, you know, Atomic Habits, The 4-Hour Work Week. And they work really well as book titles. And so if you can really master this, you'll be able to really pack an emotional punch in as few words as possible. And that's what I like to challenge people to do. It's like, tell me as much as possible or leave me with an emotion, but only give me the tip of the iceberg. And I think it's almost like a lost art or skill. But there are people like Naval Ravikant, for example. He writes a sentence and it goes, you know, it gets millions of views. And he does the exact same thing. He uses one sentence and there's this huge emotional payoff or it sparks debate. And that's one of his main staples, right? He gets tons of attention because he's mastered this. So it's just an idea that I've always been fascinated with and like to work on myself.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the part that most people miss, and the reason most people aren't doing this, is they don't understand a lot of thought has to go into the iceberg. You have to understand what it is and come up with the words that are going to allow the person to at least hear echoes of the iceberg. So a lot of people write without thinking, and then they don't think afterwards. They don't edit. They just say, oh, well, I'm just being myself. I'm just sharing my thoughts. That's enough. Well, maybe not. So I love the way you put it. How about frameworks? What frameworks do you use to tell stories about your clients or, you know, if you're writing copy or doing marketing about, you know, client, their own customers, their own clients? Do you have frameworks?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to tie this back into mistakes, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make when sharing stories about their clients is just saying, hey, my client just made $1 million or my client just got this big result. It was easy. Call to action, right? Send me a DM if you want these same results, right? And this day and age, people are, and we've discussed this before, David, it's like the great trust recession. You can screenshot anything, put it into Canva and mix some numbers up. I don't trust screenshots, you know, and I feel like everyone's a lot more suspicious of what you're seeing in your feed, in your inbox. And so I don't think that cuts it anymore. And so a framework I like to use that it's actually doubled my click-through rate in my welcome sequences. It's doubled my conversions for clients. It's essentially, you know, you introduce your client. This is my client. And it's very similar to the hero's journey, but like I said, more directed for copy. But you have your client who is forced to make a change. So say I've got somebody that's small, they own a bakery, right? But they're forced to make a change because of the economy and people aren't buying, you know, going out and buying from restaurants. So now they need to know how to get more leads, right? So now they're forced to make a change, and this is where they meet the guide. And essentially, you are the guide, they're the hero, and you introduce a solution to them to get more leads to their bakery in an economic downturn, right? And so this is the part that most people miss out, is that you provide your solution, but you did something that didn't work out the way that you intended. So basically, I gave them my meta ad scripts and told them to offer this specific deal to get more feet into the door into the bakery for upsells. But something happened. Zuckerberg changed the algorithm and this ad campaign was no longer effective. And now it's like, what's on the line? You offered a solution for them that didn't work. What's on the line if you fail, right? And it's like, wow, this is a big client. Okay, maybe they own 10 bakeries. And now my solution isn't working. So now I have to go the extra mile to figure out how to do this for them. And then that's what changes for a lot of people is like, now I'm showing vulnerability. Like, hey, my solution didn't necessarily work. Things changed, which they do on the internet and marketing all the time now, right? And it's like, this is how I went the extra mile. We did a Google Ads campaign as well as a TikTok ads campaign. And we found out that the majority of attention has shifted over to TikTok as far as what people search for local bakeries. And that's when we got the results. And so by having that in there, like I almost failed, my reputation was on the line. Here's how I went the extra mile. It's a trust builder, a credibility builder, and it shows people you're willing to take that extra step. And that's something that is almost always missed in people's stories. If you look on social media, a lot of it, like I said, is just screenshot. Hey, you want this? It's like, who are you? Why should I trust you? Is always the first thing that comes to my mind, right? And then obviously anywhere you can, depending on the format, anywhere you can put proof, screenshots of DMs. Like I said, people can be a little iffy about that. But if you have a testimonial on a video of like your results and you ask them how things were and the person's there, it's going to separate you from the crowd.
That's really good. And I like that additional piece, you know, the Zuckerberg changed his algorithm and it failed and we had to try something else. I mean, that shows struggle. Struggle is real life. And a lot of people are, they're afraid it won't make him look as perfect or as invulnerable. But as you point out, the vulnerability actually makes them more believable and more sympathetic.
I want to add, when you're watching like a rom-com, a romantic comedy movie, if boy meets girl and they live happily ever after is the plot, that's boring. Boy meets girl, things are going great, something happens, everything falls apart. He has to go find her and stop her from leaving on the plane, on the runway. And that follows what you were talking about. And that's what really makes a story compelling is it looked like same thing with like an action adventure movie. We're going to go storm the fortress. We've got the perfect plan. We get halfway through and something unexpected pops up. And now we have to adjust the plan. That's what makes a story compelling. So I think that adding in what you were talking about, this is what I usually do, but it went wrong. And so we had to adjust. That really makes your story much more compelling.
Yeah, that's a golden secret. Really appreciate it. Okay, let's talk about the concept of digital storytelling. What is it? Why is it so important?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the concept that I've almost been obsessed with over the past 3 to 4 years. But, you know, and David, you outlined this masterfully in your book, like I said, The Persuasion Story Code. But, you know, there's the framework of like old storytelling is like the hero's journey, blockbuster movies, novels, right? And now in this new digital age, you see, I don't think I want to say it's shrinking attention spans, but that kind of format isn't going to work for everybody, whatever your purpose or your goal is. If it's marketing, it's getting a sale, getting attention online, whatever it is, business-wise, you can, if you're going to try to make a post on, let's say, LinkedIn and you write a Lord of the Rings novel, no one's going to read it, unfortunately, right?
Right.
And so that's the thing is in the digital age, people love stories. They're more hooked on them than ever. They essentially hypnotize people. And if you tell it right, you know, you give them an emotion, you entice the emotional part of the brain. It moves past the logical part of the brain that holds the objections. Right. And right. So now where you've seen this long form art of storytelling, it's really been condensed into a short form. And whether you're looking for attention to deepen relationships, to build trust and to monetize, you're going to have to learn to tell stories, especially in the age of AI, right? What it can pretty much do anything but tell your own story. And I think the people that can be observant of the world and their experiences and tell it in a way online that not only gets attention, but develops a fan base, right, that relates to you is what I call digital storytelling. It's like, how can I take this emotional experience and this payoff, make it as short and punchy as possible and put it on there, and basically have enough of a payoff to where it can get millions of views, right? And that is, to me, digital storytelling in a nutshell. And, you know, back in the day, it's like if someone loved your book, it didn't go viral necessarily, right? Like you could have word of mouth, hey, I love this book, you should get it. Maybe word of mouth gets you 5 people. Whereas, you know, with virality, the thing is, things go viral because they want to share something with their friend. They feel an emotion, they want to share it with their friends, right? Like, I love puppy videos and I get an emotional payoff and I want my girlfriend to have that emotional payoff, right? Like, this puppy's adorable. This is so cute. Oh, here, it goes viral. And so the amazing part is that a lot of people think that they don't have a story or people don't care. But I think now with this, like, it's basically content saturated. It's a commodity now that anyone can use a machine. I think we're more thirsty now for those stories than ever before. And so like, if you can package an emotional payoff about your own life experience. Like, people love transformation stories. Those always do really well. Someone gets inspired and shares it to their friend, right? For example, a weight loss journey. It used to be a bad thing. Now I'm a good thing. Here are the 10 steps I took to get the body of my dreams. Whoever is wanting that transformation or has experienced that transformation is going to share that to the same people, right? And so that's the power of digital storytelling, is you can take your own experience and making it a significant marketing ploy, not ploy, but tactic of getting millions of eyeballs into what you have to say.
That's really good. So one thing you were just talking about, getting attention, I'd like to pull on that thread a little more, because, you know, the internet keeps blowing up, gets busier and busier every second. How can someone's business cut through the noise?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the things is obviously positioning. So I have several fitness clients that I work with. Fitness is very saturated, and it's just knowing who your reader is, right? I mean, that's essentially great copywriting, is thinking of who's your avatar, who you're writing to. And for example, I have one client who is in his 50s. And who is his clientele? It's men in his 50s, right? And one of the problems was, is like, how do I compete with cookie cutter programs and 20-year-old TikTokers who don't know anything about fitness but can get the most attention because they know the platform, right? And I was like, well, let's just add a sentence into your hook that tells your specific market who you work with, right? And so it's like, you know, he'd have something. It was like, the thing that's slowly killing you, visceral fat. I've been a health and fitness coach for over 25 years, specifically for men between 40 and 50. Here's everything you need to know about visceral fat and how to get rid of it. And he ended up getting, not only going viral, but a lot of clients in the same day who were all in that target area. So it's positioning yourself with your target market is a great way, because what necessarily gets the most attention isn't necessarily for the right market, right? Contrarian takes, whatever you see people saying, if you say the opposite, that does super well. For example, there's the longevity guy, Brian Johnson. And for a very long time, there was AG1, right? All these health influencers, or I'm sorry, like podcasts were promoting AG1 as a vitamin supplement, right? For decades, Joe Rogan, all these guys. And Brian Johnson makes a video and he says, yeah, it's a lie. He's like, this isn't a good vitamin. My vitamin's better. And it just broke expectations because everybody had said the same thing for so long. So if you were a business owner and you'll see common advice floating around, right? Like if someone says something and it goes viral, there's going to be 1,000 squawking parakeets that'll say the same thing to try to get that attention. And if you have your own opinion, being opinionated and going against the grain, it's not for everybody, but if you've got the stomach for it, and again, going back to like the subtle art of not giving a fuck as an example, Mark Manson went against the typical self-help advice that everyone had, right? Every self-help book was the same. Just be positive, have affirmations. And he just was like, okay, most self-help advice sucks. You know, this is the self-help book that doesn't suck. So having an opinion, a contrarian thought. And then one of my favorite things to do is I call it profitable trend hacking. And what I'll do is I'll go to like Google Trends. I'll use an extension called Glimpse. And I'll start to look at topics in my field or my client's field that are suddenly breaking out in search demand. And what's really interesting is with a lot of these social media platforms is if you go viral, you'll get featured on SEO. So if people are searching for, let's say, you know, we found the topic of visceral fat. No one was talking about it, but it was being searched. And because it was being searched, it went super viral, millions of views. And then when people searched for visceral fat on Google, the viral X post was the top one featured on SEO. And so it creates this flywheel of like, you're getting attention locally from social media, but you're getting a boost from SEO. And then when you know what's trending, you can write about it. You can kind of be the first news story, especially if you're an expert, right? I'm not saying use AI and just whip up a story because it's trending. That doesn't work. But for this example, I had a client who trained Robert Downey Jr. He had all the credibility. He knew about visceral fat. I said, hey, this is starting to trend. Can we write something about this? And then basically it exploded. And what's great with that attention, you know, like, I don't know what you pay in New York City for rent, but how many eyeballs you have to, like, you know, say you pay thousands of dollars in New York City to get so many eyeballs at your store. with the internet, like, and especially virality, if you get 5 million views on your post in a day, like, what does that transition to, right? Like, that's just the most economical way to get people to look at your business. And so, like, for that factor, it's like you can tell a great story, you can have a great piece of copy or content, and then the call to action is, you know, it could be a link to your sales page or DM me for a sales call. And so by having, like, trend hacking, seeing what people are searching and talking about, and then aligning yourself as the expert there, and then leveraging the demand, the attention demand for that, you can get a lot of eyeballs to your business in a short amount of time.
Those are excellent ideas and some good ones I've never heard before. I really like it. Do you have a step-by-step process to write stories on a social media platform to get millions of views?
Yeah. And so there's a couple of things that are involved in it, right? So there's two types of people on social media. There's the observer, and then there's the consumer. And you never want to be a consumer. So it's observing what's working. And so unlike copy for emails or sales pages where it can be formulaic, like social media, what's working and what's not is very strict and formatted. It's not as fun to write. Like copy, you know, you can have emails and sales pages and you have a little more freedom where basically there's like a limited amount of hooks and trending hooks that are happening on social media that go viral. And it depends on the platform that you're on, but if you're observing enough and not just consuming, you'll notice that the people are using the same hooks. And so the hook is 80% of everything. It's the 20% that gets the 80% of the results, for lack of a better expression. And so what you'd want to do is basically know your platform, know what's working, and observe the hooks that are really taking off, and then basically using that hook for yourself, right? Like on Twitter, it used to be like 99% of people don't know X, but X will give you Y. Here's everything you need to know. And you'll see it's very like formatted and formulaic, but observing and then creating a swipe file or bookmarking these hooks to apply to your own idea. And then it can have like, you can have basically your concept or your angle. So you've got a hook that you know will work. And then it's like, okay, what am I offering? And what angle can be unique? So like, for example, you might see stories about Taylor Swift trending. You know, she's going for these concerts, but how can you put a fresh spin on Taylor Swift's story, right? It's like, oh, do you know the story about Taylor Swift's boots that were given to her by her great grandfather? Like, here's the boot secret that you need to know. It's probably a terrible example, but if you see a hook in a story that's trending, how can you put a fresh spin and a unique angle on it? And then the biggest thing is watch time. So all these companies are making money with ads. And so they will reward you with more attention and more reach the longer someone sits on your post, right? And so if it's video, that's why watch time is such a big deal on YouTube, right? This person's got a lot of watch time. People are watching a lot of ads with this person. And so it's got to be great copy, like compelling. You want to take people, they're scrolling, they're problem unaware. You want to make them know that they have a problem. And then obviously hint that there's a solution in there with the hook, with benefits. But retaining them with multimedia graphics, infographics, right? Like you'll see on X, for example, like people will write something in a Google Doc and screenshot it. Well, there's a watch time trick there. So you want people to click on the image and sit there and read it. And now if they engage with it, it's a lot more powerful. And so it's having those elements. It's like, okay, I've got my hook, I've got my concept, you know, clearly write your copy with the emotion or the payoff that you want in mind. One of my most viral stories, for example, is about Adam Sandler. I saw that he was trending. And I love Adam Sandler. I'm a diehard Happy Gilmore guy, Big Daddy, all that stuff. I saw that he was trending because he was the highest paid Netflix star. And being observant to that, yeah, he was making like $800 million, something crazy, right? And I'm not a big fan of his new movies. But I saw that and something happened in my mind. I'm like, how is that possible? And so I knew that somebody would relate to that. So essentially, I went on a deep dive, looked up Adam Sandler's story. And it was like, okay, I saw a timeline on his movies, right? They did really well. They weren't doing well. And then on Netflix, he was doing really well. And it was like, you know, basically he had to reposition himself. He had to kind of change his brand and who he was targeting, which was the main lesson of it. But then it was like taking people on that journey. It's like, okay, you know, Adam smash hit, career hit. And then it was like a multimedia graphic that I made. And it was like a timeline of his income. And I'm like, do you see a pattern here? And so people would click on it and look for the pattern and sit there. And then it would be like, okay, you know, this movie came out, it did well. But then Jack and Jill came out, you never heard of this movie. And then leading them to that payoff. And everyone liked it at the end. It's inspirational because everyone in Hollywood hated Adam. They said he would be a loser, but he just stuck to his guns and ends up being the most, you know, the highest earning Netflix movie guy because he's just himself and he wanted to be with his friends. And like, people loved it. And then any kind of controversy. So a big thing is people responding in the comments. A lot of these networks want to see that there's a community being built. And another example is I wrote a story. I'm currently living in Brazil. And I was like, you know, simple. I'm an American. I've been living in Brazil for a year. Here's 10 crazy experiences that you need to know. Something along those lines. And I purposely put at the last, I'm like, Brazilians said they invented the airplane. But Americans said the Wright brothers invented the airplane. Who's right? And on that one alone, there was thousands of comments of people arguing, going back and forth. And I just knew that that would drive up engagement. And that one got about 5 million views because I know there was some controversy, right? And like I said, use it at your own discretion. I don't read the comments. I know better. But my poor girlfriend, she was on the picture with me. And she's like, I can't believe they're saying this. And I'm like, I told you not to look at the comments. But anytime you can get people to engage, and then even if you ask them a question, it's like, oh, thank you for that compliment. What was your favorite part? And then they reply, it gives you more boosts because now the algorithm's like, oh, this post is creating a community around this. Let's show it to more people. Those are the big picture tactics. There's a little other stuff to it. Hopefully it wasn't too much for you.
I'm going to tie that back to your first point. You said be observant. Also be observant of your own posts. Keep track of what's working, what's not working, examine why, and to judge, especially on social media, what's working versus what's not working. That watch time is important. Those comments, they tell the algorithm, hey, people are interested in talking about this. Show it to more people. Sharing also, if you can get something that when you say it, people see it and they say, oh, I want my audience to know about this. And if you can get their audience engaging with it, that also triggers, hey, this is outside of his social media ecosystem and it's still getting ripple effect out there. So let's show it to more people that might not even know about this person yet. So, man, everything that you've talked about so far is just amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, of course. Thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Well, good. If we have a minute or two more, could you tell us about your mad scientist research course? I just have a feeling it ties into everything we've been talking about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been a little bit of a nerd, and any good writer, any good copywriter or marketer does their research, right? It's all about front loading and finding demand. And the funny part is it took me about 5 years to earn a dollar online. Maybe it's a side effect of the neck tattoo. I was a very slow learner. And that's because I was building something that nobody wants, right? I started blogging for electricians. Fun fact, electricians don't read. And the ones that did read certainly weren't reading my blog. And yeah, I started a podcast for electricians, but I was also on the wrong platform for that. And I basically spent years and thousands of dollars failing and arguably failing backwards, not forwards, right? And that's because I wasn't meeting demand. I wasn't creating things that people needed, that they wanted. And later, as I got more and more into copy and seeing what worked on social media, identifying trends, kind of trying to predict what people want, what they're searching, what are their number one burning crises, right? Especially with great copy, you need to do that. And basically, with the age of AI, being able to find these problems and spot these patterns and demands are a lot better than ever, especially crafting your offers and performing, a SWOT analysis on your competition. So I basically made this course around my methods that basically helped me go viral to find trends and also write amazing copy for my clients, help them stand out for the competition. And so that's inside my Mad Scientist Research course. It's just my step-by-step method to find, hey, I'm brand new to something. Wow, there's demand and longevity. And it looks like it's not a fad. It looks like it's going to be here for 5 years. Who's the biggest player? And then studying what content of theirs is working, right? Like we said, the proven hooks. And using those hooks and creating your own content plan, but making sure that you're posting the content on the right platforms that have the most demand and attention for whatever you're building, as well as creating offers around that and basically having a foolproof system for having a front-loaded process to building your business or meeting demand.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. We will include very reasonably priced, I would say underpriced probably, course to your course, the Mad Scientist course, in the show notes. Nathan, you want to take it away?
For people that are just listening, which is an utter sin, you should definitely go to copywriterspodcast.com, check the show notes there. But for people that are just listening, is there an easy URL where people can find the Mad Scientist research course?
The best place is just parkerworth.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter, and I'll be able to send that to you there. Otherwise, you can just go to find me at Twitter at my last name, Worth_Parker. And the same ones on LinkedIn. You can send me a message. But yeah, otherwise, my newsletter's lots of fun. And like I said, I really appreciate you guys having me on here. Both of you are inspirational and love what you do. So thank you.
Nice. All right. Well, it felt good having another person with above shoulder tattoos on the show. So I enjoyed that. And man, just a wealth of knowledge that you dumped into today's episode. So thank you so much for coming on. Awesome. And again, if you want to get access to all of the stuff that Parker has going on, we will have it in the show notes over at copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.